Well, I think everyone intrinsically feels there is something there. But the ability to make it clear, to produce the insight, that is actually what's the most challenging.
Hello, I'm Alexander Zwart, and in this podcast, I delve into the IT universe of Rabobank. In this episode, we'll dive into the innovations and practical strategies for making IT greener, smarter, and more responsible. Whether you're a developer, a tech enthusiast, or just curious, this podcast is your guide to making IT sustainable, one bite at a time. Hi, welcome to already the third episode of Tech Talks. Today, I'm joined by the Scrum Master, Bob Nijkamp, and one of our tech leads, Renske Melkers-Vermolen. And we will talk about the challenges we have as a bank in becoming more sustainable also in IT. But first, before we dive in, I think it's good to get a little bit of background of what the two of you are doing within the bank. So maybe we can start with Renske. What is your responsibility as a tech lead within the bank?
As a tech lead, I lead several DevOps teams on different topics. At the moment, there's seven different teams on three topics, and I'm responsible for the IT capabilities of the area. So that does also cover IT quality, continuity improvement, resource management, and obviously people and talent management. But alongside the formal tasks of tech lead, I have also taken up some strategic topics, of which sustainable IT is the most notable one.
Nice. And you say area. What is an area?
Well, within Rabo, we have a nice division between, how to explain this. The agile terminologies always still confuse me, how we use them here. But we are part of the division Retail NL Tech, which is one of the four divisions of CITO. And the tribe, digital and customer interaction, contains of several areas. And there you have the area IT for ops and foundation. But that being said, today we're talking about Wavemakers, and that team focuses on having an impact for the entirety of CITO. So there, this division is not that important.
No, clear. So next to being, let's say, the tech lead in the area triangle, you also run this project for CITO, CITO-wide.
Yes.
Nice. Nice to hear. And Bob, you're a Scrum Master. What does that entail within Rabobank?
Well, if I have to explain that at a party, I would say that a Scrum Master is like a project manager, because that's a role that people know. But instead of being above the team, you're more like beside the team. You're more like a coach to the team. But it's a bigger role than that as well. You have to imagine that essentially you're trying to make the team the best version of themselves, and that entails coaching the people individually, making sure Scrum is understood and practiced well, not just by the team, but also by their surrounding environment, their stakeholders, the management. So you're all over the place, basically.
And if you want to make the team the best team they can be, how does then sustainability fit in?
Well, in any regular team, you need to make sure that sustainability comes in the right place and that the knowledge is there and the awareness is there. So, for example, developers need to have the skills to do something with sustainability, but also a product owner needs to align with their stakeholders, with the team stakeholders, so that they get the right priority, essentially. So sustainability is one of the many priorities that a team has, as is security, like a similar sort of thing. One of those things that even if you're building a product for the end customer, it's one of those things that you need to take into consideration. So you need to make sure that your stakeholders know and that your product owner knows like how to prioritize these things. But first, to get them on the radar in the first place, right? Because sustainability is not such a common topic for most teams, what I've gathered so far.
No, clear. So this is about the team, but then still we need a project like Wavemaker, Renske. Why do we need that? I mean, if you build the capabilities in the team, why is that not enough?
Well, to be able to have the capabilities in the team, you need some central support and steering to get to a business as usual state. And in full honesty, we are far from there yet. So we started with Wavemakers 1.5 years ago. And we are now at the point that at least within our original tribes and a big part of retail and LTech, people are beginning to become aware of the impact of the choices they make in their development, in their coding, in the environments they spin up, that there is also a footprint related to that. But it took us 1.5 years to get there. And we are spreading more and more. But we need to be able to give the teams the correct tools, the correct pieces of knowledge for them also to convince other stakeholders. So for that point of view, we are definitely not there yet. At the same time, I always in my presentations keep saying we start with waves, but in 3 to maximum 5 years, my aim is we don't need those waves anymore because it will be ingrained in everything we do and we're back to still waters when it comes to sustainability.
And you say it took quite some while to become aware, but I mean, we have all very smart people, so everybody understands that if you use a lot of compute and storage, etc., that it of course also has an energy footprint and therefore also footprint on the world. Why does it then still take so long to get everybody aligned on that?
Well, I think everyone intrinsically feels there is something there, but the ability to make it clear, to produce the insight, that is actually what's the most challenging. Because a developer in a team or a Scrum Master can be very passionate about sustainable IT and can be the devil's advocate in the choices. But in the end, you have a product owner, we have our business decisions, and there is always another tech prio around the corner that should get more priority than this. So the only way to really make steps with sustainable IT and make it traceable is by providing teams with the insights and not the top-down massive dashboards. For the on-prem, we have a nice dashboard which I as a tech lead can use, but the teams don't get any value out of that. So one of the tools we've developed with sustainable IT insights is actually giving those insights to our squads on a feature level, what the carbon footprint is of a certain feature. And if they then make changes, they can rerun the tool and they will see through history if they're making a change, if they're having an actual impact. And then you go from the talk and the feeling we need to do something to actually measurable steps that we can then in the future also put KPIs on.
Yeah, that's really nice. And how, let's say, if I have built a feature, how then I actually, by changing it, I can actually influence the footprint? Can you have maybe show or tell me some examples of how to actually do that in practice?
Well, then I should have brought one of my engineers to this to this podcast.
I'm the wrong person at the table to support you here.
I was already looking at Bob, but I'm like, yeah, no, I know how we calculate the footprint through the model because we use a calculation from the Green Software Foundation for that. So that's a standard.
Yeah.
But the actual specific steps that the engineers will take depend on the technology, depend on the feature. But a very basic one that does make it easy to explain is, for example, the amount of data that we send back and forth for example, a customer of Rabobank to make an appointment with one of our advisors. If you already ask a ton of information there that might not be relevant, then we increase the amount of data that's being sent through the network. Or how much time does it take? Is it very confusing for a customer to fill out that form? It will take them more time. And essentially there will also be some impact. But again, if we're talking on feature level, the impacts are tiny.
Yeah.
So the only way you will see that bigger impact is if all the teams on all the features will take steps to improve, which is why we aim to make this impact for the entire organization of CITO instead of just a few tribes.
No, but that's really nice. And I can imagine that, let's say, all of these small features, that the impact is small, but a lot of small stuff, and when you use it a lot of times, and we of course have millions of customers, it still has a massive impact there.
And it's all about the mindset. So I think if we make the change, of course, the insights tool, it helps teams, it helps a product owner, it helps with KPIs, you make it visible. But getting our developers in the mindset of the choices that we make have an impact, the features that we have in our Rabo app, maybe there are too many, maybe we should cut in that to reduce the impact. Those are discussions that are yet to be had. And if we can get that into the mindset of our employees, even if they in the future would go to another organization, we will spread those waves and we will help with the future of IT.
And it's also on an engineer level as well, because if you make people actively think about, should we switch off a server or scale down at a certain point in time, or do we have that automatic scaling in place? Or maybe we should do our heavy processing in a time that there's a lot of sunshine so we can use a lot of renewable energy. What's the right term?
Demand shifting.
Demand shifting, yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, if you focus on that sort of thing, you can also make an impact. And again, this is something you take with you. So that's also why we emphasize that engineers in the team should be taught next to their stakeholders and the management, essentially. So it's everyone should be involved. It's top down and bottom up at the same time.
And it's not rocket science, right? So for example, the demand shifting, people were looking at us like, what are you talking about? I don't get it. I'm like, okay, a lot of people already have solar panels or know people that have solar panels. In the past, you used to have like the cheaper energy at night. So a lot of people were used to turn on their washing machine at night because that made sense. Power was cheapest, etc. Nowadays, we are training ourselves and our children to help think, okay, the sun is shining on our panels. We should now turn on our equipment because this is the best time to do it. And that's essentially what we're also asking of the developers with demand shifting.
Yeah, that's a very nice example. That makes it also very, very concrete. I also heard one, and maybe you recognize it as well, also the question, if you go in the office in the morning and you run your first report, how well that performs, how quickly that performs, also says something about the uptime of the report, and that makes also a huge difference. So maybe the first one to use it should be a little slower, and then the rest can use it faster. You see a lot of, I think, of examples you're giving, performance decisions, when to run models, etc., has a huge, huge impact as well.
Yeah, and maybe sometimes we also need to explain to our own employees or our customers, what is the amount of reports that we are sending within our organization at this time?
Yeah.
Do we really need all those reports? Are we building dashboards that are actually actively being used? So it's indeed also the impact of what we talk about with sustainable IT also just has a massive impact on clean code, on less downtime, less risk of any issue popping up. So it is all interconnected, but we just put a slightly different frame on it to give it just that bit more of attention to hopefully get people in that mindset.
Yeah, clear. That's also, I think, a big advantage, that if you do well for the planet, then it also has some totally different advantages, is for instance cutting down stuff you do not need anymore.
Yeah.
No, that's true. You talked about Bob about capabilities which the team needs. Mm-hmm. Is how do you engage the team on building those capabilities, on raising that awareness? Because well, as Renske explained, we have some really nice tools, but tools which are not used.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's still not less suitable. So the question is, how do you do that, and how do you get the team to actually use it and work with it?
So there's two answers to this question. One is you need capabilities within the team to solve something if they get the challenge. And the other is they need to get the challenge in the first place, right? Or the room to tackle that challenge. Because if you rightly state that there's always a next priority, and we also always have to balance these things. So when do you prioritize sustainability, and when do you prioritize building a new feature? So one is getting the people trained, and there's been trainings organized by the Wavemakers in the last year and a half. And that focuses, it depends on the audience, but it focuses, for example, for Scrum Masters, like how to first to be aware of what you're doing and what sort of impact that has, and also be aware of like small things that you're doing, the things that you're saving, for example. One of the difficult examples that is often used is, are you aware of like video calls that you're doing, whether or not your video is on that in that call, if you're using a different background, and sort of, these are very small things, but it's more about the awareness of those small things.
And about the nuance, right? Because we have seen now teams where the people have followed a training and now say in a stand-up, I'm not turning on my camera because that's not sustainable. No, but you're working from home. You haven't gotten into your car to drive to the office. So in comparison, this is already better. And then it's all about the informed choice. So turn on your camera, but maybe don't turn on the blur.
Clear. Yeah, finding the right balance between clear. Yeah,
exactly. So that is one part. Of course, there's also like technical knowledge that you need to have. Like there are code scanning tools that focus on the sustainable part of things. You usually have code scanning tools, which focus on if your code is coherent, if there are any errors, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you can also look at it from another way. And it's also making sure that we have the dashboards available so we can look into, if we make a change, what does that mean with, for example, our CO2 footprint? So there's that part. And then the other part of that question is, are you involving the right people to make the priorities clear, right? So stakeholder management, particularly in a larger organization like ours, is actually very difficult. If you run a small organization, small company, you know who your customer is. And particularly in our part of the game, you could say, like if you're supporting other teams, then you need to be actively aware of, like, who am I supporting? And for the accelerators, for example, we're talking 90 different teams. So that's quite a thing. And stakeholder management is a huge part of that deal. So getting sustainability into that conversation is important. And you need to support your product owner, from my point of view, from was one of the responsibilities of the Scrum Master, that the product owner is also aware of this, and that she also involves the right people to make these informed decisions.
For me that's clear, but you also mentioned how much there's on the backlog. So are there certain ceremonies we use in Scrum where this is, let's say, put a little bit more specific on the agenda than just one of the number of priorities? Because I can imagine that otherwise you run the risk that one team who has a few enthusiasts does something with it,
yep,
and another team who doesn't have those enthusiasts, that nothing happens there.
Exactly. So when people ask me this, like, what is the sort of ceremony you would use often, because we've discussed this in the training with the Scrum Masters as well, people kind of assume, like, oh, you'll probably use the retrospective, because that's also kind of the time for the Scrum Master to shine, to bring in certain topics. But you really engage the enthusiasts there. So that's a way of doing it. But for me, the most important part is the sprint planning. Sprint planning is where all the priorities come together. You set a goal with the team and you make sure you can achieve that goal. And that goal can be, for example, based on sustainability, if that's one of the things that should be on your roadmap.
Clear. So then you would actually set a goal on how you want to reduce or keep your footprint as it is, for example.
Yeah, well, you set the goal of, well, we want to, we've increased our capabilities, we've built a new feature, but it is very inefficient. So the goal for the next sprint is to make it more efficient. And you try to be more specific about how efficient, like X percent or something like that, maybe. And that's a goal you strive towards to. But the thing in Scrum and working in Agile in the first place is that you don't really know everything up front. You discover things as you go along, and this can be one of those things. So
yeah,
that's why it's important to set a goal and not just say, we're going to do 20 tasks.
And we aim to make this even more easy, right? So
yep,
because at this point, it's up to the expertise of the individuals in such a meeting to think of what can we do to make the improvements. And one of the next phases, the next developments that we want to achieve with our insights tool, is to also give people recommendations. So based on what we just assessed, have you already checked these and these topics to make an improvement and to try if that works? So then we don't need all our developers to be green coding experts, but we can make it as easy as possible and just hand them the bite-sized chunks and then still ask them to spend time on it and the product owner to also recognize that it's important. So we also need the business here, right? They need to also recognize this as something that's as important, as Bob said, as security, compliancy. Sustainability is as the basis of everything we do.
Clear. And you said, well, just Bob mentioned efficiency, that immediately pops up in my head as costs. But then you, of course, also say, well, we should monitor and get suggestions how to reduce our footprint. How does it then work with, for instance, all our FinOps initiatives, where we try to optimize our cloud uses? Is it then the same as this WaveMaker initiative, or is it very different?
It adds value both ways. So it is a different way of looking at things. With FinOps, the motivation is quite regularly linked to our cloud and resource usage, which if you would reduce that significantly, you will have a reduction in cost. At the same time, if we reduce the usage of our resources, it also has an impact on our footprint. So from that point of view, it is a total nice sustainable side effect. But we should all agree and recognize that the business uses it typically to reduce their spend. so that is totally valid, and we're happy with what the side effects of it are. However, if we look at sustainable IT, we are more looking at the entire life cycle of the applications that we build. So about the carbon that we generate during the production of it, about the impact it has on the end user devices, and also on how long do we use this? Because if we build a feature that we decommission in 2 years, then maybe we shouldn't have built it in the first place. So I think with sustainable IT, it's much more about the entire life cycle. And FinOps is one of the things that help with the insights. And it actually helps to convince maybe people that will not be intrinsically motivated with a carbon counter. they might be motivated by numbers. Just happen.
Yeah, although I think that's very valid. I got recently an email on my laptop. Do you want to replace it, or is it still good enough for you? And I really like that initiative, because for me it works still fine. And if I replace it a year later, of course it will have a big impact on our planet as well. So I really like those initiatives.
Can I follow up on that question? Yeah. Because I think there's also an interesting aspect for developers. It's not just FinOps and sustainability, but I think developers are intrinsically motivated to keep their code as clean as possible. There's a term called technical debt.
Yeah.
So you build something, but you know that sometimes you take a few shortcuts or you learn some things along the way and think, these things can be more efficient. Sometimes, in my experience, developers have found difficulty getting the time to actually make these things more efficient, because there's always a new feature that needs to be pushed out to the customers. So all these things go hand in hand, so that you'll have happy developers, you'll have people looking at it from the sustainable IT point of view, and people looking at the costs, all essentially interested in having the most efficient code possible. In fact, there was a colleague that I once had. He had a note, a post-it note on his desk, which said, "The cleanest, fastest, most sustainable line of code is the one that is never written." I love that.
Yeah.
Daniel, who now lives in Australia again.
No, but I think it's a nice example that you give, that making something very simple and that it probably works very fast and performant as well is cheaper, because you lose less compute. You have to probably use less storage to let it work.
Easier to maintain.
Easier to maintain. And it's as more sustainable as well. So I really like that.
Yeah, and it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more fun to work on that as a team as well, because you don't want to be solving incidents that are caused by sloppy code or inefficient code or stuff that still kind of needs repairing and is leaking in a sense. If you got all that down, you can focus on the new stuff, which is always more fun.
Yeah, then there's time for innovation. Yeah. So if you automate as much as possible, and if a central team helps, you know, any squad to be as sustainable as possible in a low effort, then they will have more time to spend on new developments and all the innovation that's possible. So,
yeah, we talked about how to get teams to be more aware, but I can imagine, I mean, we have quite some squads within the bank. Mm-hmm. How do you try to reach all of them and create awareness with all of them? Because you probably cannot have a meeting with every single product owner in this company.
I wish, no. the growth has actually so far been quite organic, and to be honest, a little bit out of our formal mandate, because we started as the initiative to make sustainable IT as fun as possible and as easy as possible for one tribe. And I think only within Retail NL we have 12 tribes, if I'm correct. So it has been quite difficult to scale that in a proper way. And we do feel that if we want to be more successful and scale more, we need to use the existing processes and governance as much as possible. So with our simplified scale framework, we do have a trickle-down system that works already quite well. We have our chapters, our technology chapters, where we should definitely also collaborate. And like the Scrum Master collaborations, you have them on an area level, and I think also on bank-wide.
Also on tribe level, also bank-wide, that's true. Yeah.
And then it would make sense to say, if we want to spread this message, let's start at a higher level, find a few ambassadors there, and help get them to help us to spread the word further. Because I also don't want people to think that like Wavemakers is the only sustainable IT initiative in Rabobank. But we managed to gain some notoriety by just being bold and being brave and the endless energy of everyone in the team and the volunteer work almost of all the other colleagues that heard about this and wanted to either help us or say, hey, we have a cool development in our squad. Maybe that could be something that's valuable for other squads. How do I get the word out there? And I do feel that that linking pin potential of a central sustainable IT team is amazing. So we have just barely scratched the surface in what we can achieve.
And can you maybe share what kind of ideas or examples then people come to you with and where they think others should do that as well, or we should share that broader within the company?
Well, I know there are some teams that actually have their innovation day every sprint. So every 2 weeks, they have one day innovation. And there are squads that specifically focus on their green coding. So cleaning up and on also checking features. Although that part was quite difficult. And at the end of the year, we will have our sustainable IT tool, insights tool available on our engineers hub. And then it will become available for all DevOps squads within Rabobank for them to use. And it's not perfect yet. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. We're still we're still just starting. So that will then even help more to structure it. So I think everything that's been happening so far is based on enthusiasm, based on people having some spare time or spending their evenings and their weekends. So as I said, a lot of volunteer work. But the enthusiasm is just, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's also just people contributing to the Wavemakers and being part of a virtual team, as they called it, as we call it.
Yeah.
And what they do is like they spend most of their time in their squads, but everyone at Rabobank has time to spend on innovation. So they choose to spend this time on sustainability. And for example, they helped to co-create the sustainable IT insights tool. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, CT.
Yeah, we used to call it the Carbon Insights tool. So sometimes I still still need to think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, these people have made a huge contribution because sometimes they come from a different perspective or they know how certain applications work. They have much more experience in the Rabobank than others do.
The guy who joined, and I'm struggling from which tribe he was. I thought Business Landing. Mm-hmm. He joined, I think, 2-3 sprints and he built the front end of this tool so that you can now just put a plugin to your browser and start measuring, go through your feature and then stop measuring. And the fact that you can quite easily now just do that with a browser plugin, he created that in a very short time.
Yep.
And yeah, that was someone who had the expertise, who had the knowledge and who had the passion to collaborate. And he got his time from his tech lead to join and to help this development. So that's also... There's still a lot of, because that 10% that Bob refers to, yes, we have the 10% for innovation, but obviously it's always spent several times over. So
it's just with getting your monthly salary. It's always difficult to to make sure you don't overspend. No, that's known. Just a very different question. So but maybe to the both of you. So working for Rabobank, I know that Renske joined us, I think, one and a half years ago.
Yeah, almost two.
Yeah, so what is it like for you to work here? What do you like? What do you like less? Where do you think we can do better? What are your observations of working here?
Let's start and then
ladies first.
As mentioned, I guess now several times, but what I really liked, at least for me as a tech lead, was to also tag along on the strategic topics. And there are a ton. So there are a lot of different topics that also need that attention and need people to drive it further because that won't always happen organically. And and the fact that in this bank, with everyone you talk to, the energy, their passion, maybe not for sustainability, but for quality engineering or any other topic, but the passion that you encounter with the people here, a lot of people are so driven and are very authentic, and that's not something you you see in every organization. So that's really inspirational. And then combine that with the fact that we have all these amazing communities where you can link to. So the Women in Tech was one that I really liked, and I joined, especially at the beginning, very often, also just to get to know people and to know you're not alone. We have a very active sustainability community. So yeah, it's about a combination of all those things. And also, I am very lucky that Rabobank as a brand as well attracts very nice people, because that's how I got to hire Bob about a year ago, a bit more, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, true. And I think following up on that, what my highlight would be is like the freedom that I get in my role, and the freedom that others get in their role as well, is for me very important to be able to take that responsibility and not just be limited to your team. And I've seen that in different organizations or with other organizations where other colleagues work in the field, that they are expected to only be a Scrum Master for their team. And over here, we have a lot of people with experience in my role and with different qualities. Some people are better at coaching, other people at agile methodologies or Scrum itself. But we all get the opportunities to coach our leadership as well. And they're open to that. And that is very important, because it is a very big organization that we work for. At least it's one of the biggest that I've ever worked for. And hierarchy is something that I personally dislike, because I don't want people to make decisions because they are the boss. I want people to make decisions because they're knowledgeable about something, that they can make the right decision because they know all the facts. And fortunately, our leadership is open to that sort of conversation.
Now that's good to hear. And how do you, because both of you are here, you have a lot of room to take initiatives. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that then, of course, with all the other tasks which are on your plate as well?
Sometimes difficult.
Yeah, sometimes you end up having several jobs. So for me, it's at the moment easier to tell the people, especially on the Wavemakers team, to mind their time and to prioritize. It's a bit more difficult for me sometimes, to be completely honest. So running 2 to 3 jobs at the same time can be quite challenging. But then, yeah, you get into the territory of following your passion. Obviously, there are also a lot of other tasks for a tech lead. I'm also involved with several other initiatives, like a Voice of Consumers, which also aims to improve our internal processes. And we still have a lot of the standard stuff, just simple in control and trying to hire people. I mean, the amount of effort and time that we put in as tech leads to get the right people on our team, we don't delegate all of that simply to a recruiter. And we don't delegate all the knowledge on the vendors we work with to vendor management. No, we also need to have a say in the contract that we select. So to balance it, it's quite difficult. And I think the freedom part of it, and whether it's 10% or whether it is the 50% you don't really have, is actually also what gives the energy when maybe other topics become a bit more challenging. Because as Bob rightly says, he likes it when someone that's knowledgeable takes the decisions, mm-hmm. but it's not always fun to have to take those decisions. No. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's clear. And Bob, maybe a question to you. If mm-hmm. if you work a lot with sustainability at the office, what do you do with it when you get home? Does it also influence your private decisions on that? Do you look differently at the stuff you do at home as well?
I do, yeah. It makes you very aware, especially the trainings themselves make you very aware of what you do. And to be entirely clear, I think if it comes to passion about sustainability, it's for me a number two topic. I'm most passionate about Agile, working in Scrum, working Agile, with compared to Renske, like she is the sustainability guru in my eyes, or at least one of the spearheads of the company. But I'm still very aware of what I do. And you look at this from a lot of perspectives. It is, what kind of equipment do I have in my home? Do I switch everything off before I go out? Is there anything unnecessary? How do I travel to work? So I always take the train. But I live next to a train station, so that makes it easier for me. It's from train station to in a direct connection. But those sorts of considerations are definitely there. Yeah, and it's also about recycling your stuff and having the right energy supplier, for example. Like some, if they have solar power and wind power, for example, that makes a small difference again. And it's all these little things. I know that I can't change the world by just my actions, but it's setting a right example. Or I have a 2-year-old daughter, also doing the best that I can on my little part of the equation, so that at least my footprint is reduced. But it's even nicer to do that at work, so it's bigger than just yourself, right?
True.
So. Yeah, the impact you can have here, of course, is much much bigger. And how does it influence you at home and at work?
Well, at home, I totally resonate with the comment about the kids. So my daughter just turned 3, my son is almost 5, and the fun that they have to, like if we have a piece of plastic, it's always a fight about who gets to throw it away in the plastic bin, because we have a separate bin for that. So their help with throwing away the glass jars, etc. So from that point of view, it's a lot of fun. We also bought a very old house in 2016, and this year we finally finished all the insulation, so we now have our glazing all fixed. We have our walls also insulated, and now we are with a house of 1928. We are label A. I don't think we can get higher because you're limited to. But we've done everything we could, and indeed, at the same time, you realize just my individual action is not going to change the world. And even though as a tech lead you can have a big impact, you are mainly responsible for a limited amount of teams. 7 teams is a lot, but it's still limited. And what I really like about the topic of sustainable IT is that we now get to have a bigger impact even, because we get to reach out to not only retail and LTech, but essentially, the entire Rabobank is actually the e-learning that's now being developed based on our materials. The first module is about the overall general impact of IT. That e-learning will become available for all, 50,000 employees of Rabobank. I mean, that just makes me so proud that we started so small. And we have a responsibility. I truly feel that. Also, as this organization, we are so big, a big IT organization, that it is our responsibility to really shape what we feel the future of IT should look like. And then I believe sustainable IT is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think with these last words, it's really nice to end up. I think we couldn't do that better. Thanks very much for the time of both of you, and also for taking all these initiatives which are not formally part of your job. So I truly believe that this is also the best way for us to become better, and not, as I agree with Bob, not having managers who all do this, but really having an organization which brings this out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the next Tech Talks, we unravel another part of the IT universe of Rabobank. If you are curious about working at Rabobank IT, go to rabobank.jobs and find out how you can contribute to our mission of growing a better world together.